Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to spend $1.3 billion over the next 30 years slaughtering nearly a half a million barred owls. The federal government, that's who. The Fish and Wildlife Service. Oh, for Pete's sake, William Perry Pendley, man, he had a great write-up in the Washington Examiner just last week, if you guys missed it. The war on timber towns is very real. He mentions this. People coming of political age in the last decade or so were no doubt shocked to learn of the Biden administration's insane plan for saving the northern spotted owl from purported extinction. According to the Fish and Wildlife Service, the agency responsible for implementing the Endangered Species Act, preserving the owl requires slaughtering nearly half a million barred owls at a cost, opponents say, of $1.3 billion over the next 30 years. That is so, the Fish and Wildlife Service maintains, because the larger, aggressive barred owl is killing its cousin at a prodigious rate. Now, you guys remember when they did this exact same thing, they proposed this exact same thing back in the 1990s, even though they were blaming you. Who? You. They were blaming you, the loggers, for killing and destroying the spotted owl habitat. And then they said, actually, we got to spend a bunch of money shooting these other owls because they're mating with these other owls. Anyway, absolutely crazy stuff here. But William Perry Pendley, he was President Trump's, the head of the Bureau of Land Management under President Trump's first term. But William Perry Pendley, as you guys know, I mean, he has been fighting for those of us here in the Rocky Mountain West, oil, gas, coal, agriculture, timber towns, you name it, free speech, religious liberties, since the Reagan administration. But I got a note from Perry Pendley the other day, and he was sharing this story that he wrote, this column that he wrote for the Washington Examiner about how the war on timber towns is very real. And he said, Aaron, he says, I got a great guest for your show. Who? He says, you got to talk. Okay, that's the last time I'll do the who reference. Don't worry. He says, you got to talk with my friend, Teresa Platt. She's got a new novel out. And now it's a fiction novel. But boy, I tell you what, when you hear about this fiction novel, there is so much truth. And sometimes, isn't it just great how a fiction novel can captivate a story for you and communicate so much truth? Coming up right after the break, we're going to catch up with Teresa Platt, T.H. Platt, and talk about her book. It's called The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain. So that'll be coming up here right after the break. And then later in the hour, we should have phone lines open for you if you got something you want to talk about. And then a couple of big stories we're going to talk about. President Trump wants the Washington Redskins name back. Will the logo honoring a legendary Blackfeet Nation leader once again be restored? We'll get to that one, if not this hour, next hour. And a longtime Montana newsman says the tourists are killing Glacier National Park. Sarge joins us next hour.
It's July 21st, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today is National Junk Food Day. While it may be an excuse to indulge in our favorite salty snacks or so good it's bad treats, remember, too much of a good thing is never healthy. The term junk food was coined in the 1970s by microbiologist Michael Jacobson, who saw that Americans were eating too much food high in fat, salt, sugar, and preservatives. However, today there are many healthy alternatives to the junk food we crave, so remember, everything in moderation. Also on this date, in 1853, the New York legislature set aside more than 750 acres of land on the Isle of Manhattan, which would eventually become the iconic green space in New York City, Central Park. And in 1987, Guns N' Roses released their debut album, Appetite for Destruction, which would become the best-selling debut album of all time. I'm Tushar Saxena, and that's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. A lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
Mom, is this how you feed a hamster?
I think so.
Is my homework right?
I think so.
Is this milk still good?
I think so.
When it comes to parenting, sometimes it's okay to think you know. But when it's something as important as your child's car seat, don't just think. No. Double check if your child is in the right seat for their age and size. It'll help protect them in a car crash. Don't just think. No. By visiting nhtsa.gov/the right seat. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, great to have Teresa Platt, T.H. Platt, the author of The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain, now with us here on Montana Talks. I was chatting with her during the break to get a little more of her background, working in agriculture, family background in agriculture, from Regina, Saskatchewan, just north of our friends in Plentywood, all the way down to Los Angeles, California. Teresa, great to have you on the show. Our producer, Caden, says, I need to ask you what the TH is all about. You go by TH Platt for your novels, etc.
Yeah, I figured that, 20 years from now, some big burly trucker would walk past my novel sitting on a bookshelf and say, oh, Teresa Platt, that must be a woman's romance, and he'd keep on walking. So I said, I'm gonna trick that guy into picking up my novel. I think you'll have a really, really good read.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about your book, The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain. Perry Penley recommended you, and so I know this is a book that is going to speak right to our listeners in, timber towns, or sadly, former timber towns. We've lost so many timber mills and so much of our timber industry here in Montana and across the West. But why would your book also speak to a broader audience as well?
Well, I was insisting when I first had the idea that I needed to write something about in fiction to really get people's hearts and minds and understand what was happening to the food, the fiber producers in America, that we were being overregulated. And my dad had bought a fishing boat. I was running it from the office, and the regulations coming out of D.C. were complete insanity. So I said, it's difficult to convey this with white papers, policy papers. We need fiction to get people to really grasp the story. But fiction is difficult with a fishing boat that goes out to sea 90 days at a time. There's only men on board. There's this constant horizon. There's some fish. How do you build a scene like that? And I was in Sacramento with Women in Natural Resources. It was a group that was started by Nadine Bailey. And there was an old logger there that talked to me after I'd given a presentation on the problems in our fishery. And he came up and said, Teresa, we have very similar problems. If you comply with these regulations, you said in your speech, you would collapse your fishery in about 2 years. Fisheries die very quietly. Nobody sees them. It's invisible. It's underwater. Still a catastrophe, especially if it's man-made. And so he said, we have a very similar problem. The regulations are so bad, they will collapse the forest. It will take 40 years to get there, but when they go, everyone will notice. So I went to dinner with Bill Denison, who the Unabomber targeted. I went to dinner with Women in Natural Resources, Nadine Bailey. We talked about the use of fiction. I said, I'm changing my book, and I'm changing it from fisheries to forestry. It's the same problem, but the story can be illustrated in your mind. You can see it. So I was probably in my 30s when I made that decision. And I wrote this book on airplanes after conferences. At Christmas, when I had a little time, in between jobs, and then finally, I'm pretty much semi-retired now, although you could say this book is taking way too much of my life, but I finished it. And so that's decades of work trying to piece this together. But I think, the reviews are wonderful. They're very encouraging. And Perry's review in the Washington Examiner, which is spot on. So I'm out there, yeah, trying to get the word out on the book so people will read it, so I can move on to the sequel and continue writing about these characters, the plays, and the conflicts, and set in forest of the Pacific Northwest, but the book goes global. So it has, I think, a lot of things that people can relate to in an overregulated world where food and fiber producers are perceived as the enemy, which is insane. It's sort of suicidal.
That's right. Not only a book that would speak to people in timber towns of Montana, but really all over the world. I mean, Europe has been dealing with these radical environmentalists right now. I love the summary that you put together on your Substack account. I'll just read from that here just for a paragraph or two. If you treasure forest land and are concerned about globalization and its impact on small towns and villages, about the power, funding, and influence of corporate, political, and environmental alliances, you will find The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain an action-packed novel for people who think deeply and care greatly about nature and the future. It, you know, for some reason, I'm thinking about the books and the movie The Hunger Games. And really, we are seeing kind of these environmentalist corporate slash government hunger games play out right before our very eyes right here in Montana.
Well, the use of the word hunger in the title is not just an accident, right? This is a very real thing, hunger and shelter and the basic necessities of life, plus a defensible space around a village. Some of the scenes are set in Pacific Palisades. I lived there in my teens, and so I have scenes on streets that no longer exist because Pacific Palisades doesn't even have a decent fire break anymore, and it's surrounded by neglected federal lands. They have exactly the same problems as people have living in timber country. So I think the choice of forests to relate to people, everyone has a forest somewhere in the world that they love, and the management of that forest and the survival of the people who live in it is just so important to everybody, whether you're near the forest, downstream from the forest, working in the valleys, wherever you are, you're tied to that forest, those people. And to simply remove them is just incredibly sad.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Palisades. I mean, that's basically the area in L.A. that was just completely destroyed by fires here in the past year, if I'm not mistaken. All right, T.H. Platt, Teresa Platt, hold that thought. Quick break here on Montana Talks. I want to talk about the spotted owl and much more right after this. Stand by.
Fox Sports Update.
1-2, and that's strikeout number 10 for Tarek Skubal.
Reigning American League Cy Young Award winner, All-Star Game starting pitcher Tarek Skubal helped the Detroit Tigers snap a six-game losing streak. Skubal struck out 11 Texas Rangers last night in Arlington on ESPN, where the Tigers beat the Rangers 2-1. Detroit atop the Major League Baseball standings by a half game over the Brewers and the Cubs. The Brewers ran their win streak to 10 games Sunday. For the second time in under 2 weeks, Milwaukee completed the three-game sweep of the Dodgers, 6-5. The Cubs lost 6-1 to the Red Sox, who got a pair of home runs from Willier Abreu. Boston also got a pinch-hit three-run home run from Alex Bregman. Sox have won 14 of the last 18 games. The Cubs' win streak was snapped at 4. The White Sox handed the Pirates their third straight loss, 7-2. The AL East leading Blue Jays beat the Giants 8-6. Toronto, three games ahead of the Yankees, who beat the Braves 4-2. Behind the 351st career home run by Aaron Judge, who's now tied with Alex Rodriguez for the sixth most in Yankee pinstripes. The Angels quadrupled the Phillies 8-2. Royals over the Marlins 7-4. Orioles topped the Rays 5-3. Xander Bogaerts hit a grand slam for the Padres in an 8-1 win over the Nationals. The Guardians got 11 strikeouts from Gavin Williams in an 8-2 win over the Athletics. The Mets slipped by the Reds 3-2. Royce Lewis hit two of the Twins' four home runs in a 7-1 win over the Rockies. Second game in a row, Eugenio Suarez hit two home runs for the Diamondbacks, who defeated the Cardinals 5-3. Golf, Scottie Scheffler won the Open Championship by four strokes over American Harris English. Scheffler's second major win this year. He also won the PGA Championship. This is his fourth major title. For the second year in a row, Denny Hamlin raced a victory at Dover Motor Speedway. Did so in double overtime over Joe Gibbs racing teammate Chase Briscoe. I'm Jared Max.
Get more on the Fox Sports app and foxsports.com.
Back
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Yeah. Call in if you want to jump in on the conversation with our guest here, the author of The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain, Teresa Platt. 406-294-0970. You can also message us on the Montana Talks app as well. And let's see, Jim and Kalispell, we'll get to you here in just a second. I want to talk Spotted Owl. I want to talk about, you know, the global side of this whole fight and more. But first, Teresa, I know when we were chatting with you before scheduling this interview, you said, hey, let's try to describe the book without giving away the plot. And you can do that better than I can. How would you describe this book without giving away the plot?
Well, it is fiction, and I take an environmental reporter and pull her out of Los Angeles, Pacific Palisades, oddly enough, and drop her into the Pacific Northwest timber country, where she has conversations with real people that she's never met, doesn't understand. And it sort of opens her worldview. But behind the scenes, there's all kinds of players who have brought this community to bankruptcy and to basically a tinderbox. They're surrounded by unmanaged land, so it's dangerous to be living there anymore. Do they keep fighting? Do they leave? Who are the players that are pulling the strings and making their life, you know, untenable? So I go global. I go pretty deep. There's a lot of treaties involved in this. And Substack is a wonderful platform because it let me hyperlink and include, you know, avenues to more info for the people who like to go a little deeper. I've got it on ebooks now, too. Paperback is probably, you know, if you're really imaginative and you can see all these things, it's a great place to start. But Substack was an amazing, amazing vehicle because it takes the story digitally, globally. So we've hit 39 countries, and it's fantastic to hear from people all over the planet.
And speaking of taking it globally, I think you're actually joining us right now from Southwest France. So it's probably evening time, your time right now, or at least late afternoon, I guess, for you, mid to late afternoon. You know, the other thing that I find fascinating here when I saw the book title, The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain, last October, we did an event highlighting the Bidenomics inflation, and it was at a grocery store in Libby, Montana. And we had like 40, 50 people show up before we even started our event just to get a gift card to the grocery store. And I just remember thinking, like, look, I know inflation is eating people's lunch right now under Joe Biden and John Tester, but I'm like, wow, it was a beautiful Saturday morning. People should be out in the woods. They should be out enjoying the great outdoors, but they're that desperate for a grocery store gift card in a town that is surrounded by timber, a sea of timber. They literally have a gold mine underneath their feet, you know, in terms of mining potential. All that's been shut down by our federal government and radical environmentalists. All right, let's sneak in a quick phone call here. Jim, Jim in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, I guess a question and a comment. You know, I used to be in the forest industry, and apart from regulation, we need investment in the federal and state land in the form of non-commercial trucks so that we can bring timber to market down the road. And it's a part of the industry that they've ignored, you know, and allowed this timber to not be, and part of what Donald Trump says is to kind of clean up the forest. To go in with non-commercial trucks, we are just giving money away by not doing that. And I wonder what your guest thinks about investment in the national forest land in terms of non-commercial cuts.
All right. Hey, yeah, thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. Teresa Platt, your thoughts on that?
Thanks for calling in, Jim. That's a really good question on how much do the taxpayers pay for land management and how much should be picked up by private enterprises, which we can therefore tax. So instead of it being a bloodletting to the treasury, it's productive. And if you take these regulations too far, you collapse the infrastructure, which I've heard is happening in some of the locations in the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, once the mill is gone, now what? You've got to reconstruct all these buildings, all the structures, everything that was created over, you know, hundreds of years. So it's not an easy, quick fix to say, we'll just go and take timber out and we'll make lumber. You know, your lumbermen are now fighting fires. So you've shifted their careers. Remember Clinton telling them they could all get jobs as data entry clerks, and then, of course, that all got exported overseas. But, I mean, you know, these guys have got fingers like sausages, and you're recommending that they take up data entry. So it's so insulting to people who have skills that go back generations, generational skills in fishing and farming and timber and all these industries. You can't just sweep it away and expect overnight.
Well, and to your point too about rebuilding those mills, you know, what President Trump is doing right now, you know, the Trump administration doing away with the roadless rule, that's going to be huge. And so much more to make our timber industry great again. But we had Governor Greg Gianforte, along with the head of the entire U.S. Forest Service, on after they just right before they just announced a big agreement to increase, you know, timber production and forest health initiatives here in Montana. And one of the things the governor mentioned was like, hey, you know, we've lost so many timber mills that even if we get access to more timber right now, we need more mill capacity to expand for the long haul. But in the short term, some of the mills that do remain can add more shifts of people to process more timber in the meantime.
Yeah, it's definitely turning in the right direction, and we can't continue the way we are with the middle class collapsing, with all these forest fires, with the cost of timber that, you know, people just can't afford to even build a house anymore. How many imports are you going to do? It's reached exactly what that logger told me when I was back in my 30s. I just turned 70. I mean, it was exactly what he said would happen. In 40 years, it will all collapse, and everyone will notice. And, yeah, it's going up in a blaze of glory, and we got to see it, you know, right in Pacific Palisades, right in Los Angeles, with unmanaged federal lands, with no break. Los Angeles used to be surrounded by meadows and agricultural land, but that land has now become so valuable that they built on it. It's all gone. But, you know, I mean, prudence says you should have a fire break. And if you're building a fire break, if you're clearing that land, you know, you might want to use the debris and the wood from that for something productive. Otherwise, it comes out of the taxpayer's bill, and God knows the taxpayers had enough.
Yeah. Let's go back to the spotted owl, if we can here, and you know, Perry Penley talks about that. I think there might be a spotted owl angle to your Dark Side of Hunger Mountain book here. But yeah, I remember being a kid, and they blamed the timber industry for killing the spotted owl, and talk about you know hoax, like these Russia hoaxes, we put it. The deep state has been pushing these hoaxes for quite some time now, and then they come out and say, well, we need to shoot all of these, was it the barred owls or the striped owls, because they're mating with the spotted owls, and we don't consider the offspring to be spotted owls. So instead, the federal government's going to come up with a plan to, and they did it a long time ago, and then under Biden, was it, they were trying to do it again?
Yeah, they shut down the timber industry. They, you know, they had nonsensical regulations that said, a spotted owl was seen near your house, you couldn't cut your grass because it needed mice. Mice are in open spaces, but we can't clear timber. And then if it all burns down, you lose the habitat anyway. So it was just crazy. But once they moved on to saying, well, it's a barred owl, and they have this, you know, I read the Barred Owl Management Plan last February before I went public with my book in the summer. And I think I read 1,000 pages because I had to read some of the science that was based on. And chapter 13 has one of my characters going through that process of reading this. And, you know, the barred owl is so aggressive. Wait a minute. It's a couple of ounces bigger than the spotted owl. And it's actually not that aggressive. And when you go in and you find out that, wait, they're mating. And it's the spotted owl male that's mating with the barred owl female who accepts advances, but only when barred owl male males are not available. So that Al is receptive to these advances because he wants to reproduce. And you're saying, no, you can't choose that particular partner. So it became sort of this nonsense, like, you know, how many redheaded people are there? Well, there's too few, therefore, you know, we have to save them. They shouldn't interbreed with brown-haired people with brown eyes because that's, you know, the dominant gene.
We are going to control nature. We are going to control nature. Yeah. Well, it's like, you saw that headline about the dire wolf using DNA. This was like straight out of Jurassic Park. The dire wolf brought back after 10,000 years. Now, I know some folks would say it's not technically a dire wolf. It's a hybrid. But either way, they're trying to control nature. And this is happening all over the world. It's gone global, this craziness.
It has. There's money in it. And the piece that got me very upset, I mean, your readers are going to love Chapter 13. But there's something called the Principal Component Analysis, PCA, that was the genetic testing on which all of this is based. And so there I am reading through 1,000 pages so that my characters can understand what's going on. This is insanity. And I find that the government has determined that the PCA test is biased and that 32,000 to 216,000 genetic studies should be reevaluated. So in other words, the science on which the entire barred owl, spotted owl controversy, the stripes versus the spots, is complete crap.
Wow.
Now, kind of like, times that we've come across it.
Kind of like how Obama, basically, they lied about the intelligence behind the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax. The very intelligence they used to push the hoax was complete garbage as well, but they used it to push the hoax. Very interesting. Tell you what, Teresa Platt, if you can, stick with us. We'll come back to you after the break. We got Francis and Big Fork on the phone lines. And if you want to jump in on the conversation, give us a call right now as well.
Hey, everyone.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, my wife just reminded me of a very great point here. Jessica just texted me. Same thing with the sage grouse. What a great example. It's, again, reminder, east and west, the issues are the same here in Montana. Oh, in the west, it's sage grouse. Oh, well, the energy industry is killing the sage grouse. It's taking away sage grouse habitat. And then you read the Associated Press article, and it's like, actually, it's predators that are killing. It's other birds that are killing the birds. And not the energy industry. It's what, but what do they do? They fake the science. They fake the intelligence assessments to justify their deep state operation to go after you, time and time again. All right, before we go back to Teresa Platt, the author of The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain, let's go back to your phone calls, 406-294-0970. Francis in Big Fork, did you have a quick question or comment for our guest here? Thanks for calling in.
Yes, about the government control. You know, like, we have let all this Canadian lumber come in to destroy our timber industry. And in North Dakota, they brought in all the millions of tons of wheat, so that that's why the wheat prices for this country were so crappy. So, and every time they come up with one of these stupid ideas, like, they want to take out the dams to save the fish. Well, all they do is sweep the fish out to the ocean and kill half of them. You know, it doesn't make any sense, but they don't have sense. All they want to do is destroy the country.
Sure seems
that way.
And they
think there's too many people.
Yeah, that's right. They don't want us here. They don't want you here. That's why these globalists are backing the American Prairie Reserve to kick the ranchers off the land. Francis, always great to hear from you. Teresa Platt, your thoughts.
Well, it's not just in the United States. And that comment, there's too many people, you know, according to a small group of people, there's too many people. I suppose there's too many old people because we're living so long. But, you know, a future for our kids and our grandkids and our great-great-grandkids, I mean, they have the right to have a beautiful life on this gorgeous planet that's so full of abundance. we keep getting these interventions in reality, in the basics of how we produce things, how we produce food. And, you know, years go by and they completely backfire. I think a lot of the times the government should just simply stay out of it. Let the market sort of work its way through it. Let people figure out a fix for a problem. And they generally come up with some inventive ideas and great ideas. But every time the government seems to come in, I remember trooping to D.C. years ago to talk about fishing, and one of the people suggested that we put one kind of fish in one hold and another kind of fish in another hold, and they didn't understand the basics of ballast. And I remember saying, you're going to flip the boat and kill everybody on it. You know, they just didn't know. But they were writing the regulations. And we are now buried under those kind of regulations, trying to unbury ourselves. But they are doing it over in Europe, too. If you look and see, you can see the farmers on their tractors going to Belgium complaining, over-regulation, imports that are undercutting their markets, green nonsensical rules that they can't get unburied from. And they just keep going and going and going and pushing back.
Slaughtering entire herds of cattle in the name of climate change. We've seen that in Europe as well. That's why I truly believe that the 2024 election and the battle that we're in right now to implement some of these policies, it truly is. It's a battle for Western civilization itself.
All of civilization. Civilization has to be based on reality, and you need food and fiber producers or you can't survive. I mean, are we going to live in, you know, plastic housing and basically have all kinds of pollution? Or are we going to have natural fibers and animals that roam on open prairies and beautiful forests that provide us with so much? So I see the Dutch farmers fighting back. They've had chicken and duck culls over here on, you know, avian flu, and that's rolling across the United States. We have to introduce vaccines. But why would you cull a herd that's naturally resistant to an avian flu that's carried by wild birds? Wouldn't you want to keep those birds? Instead, they're culling those too. So once again, you see these crazy examples of regulations made by people who actually don't work on the farm. But if they worked on the farm, they'd probably give you some pretty good solutions. It's not the first time they've had avian flu on a chicken coop or on a farm, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it's rolling across continents.
The Canada conversation from earlier, yeah, for a long time, here we were, our own government was attacking our timber industry in America with radical left-wing federal judges right here in Montana colluding with environmental groups and Democrat politicians to kill the timber industry. But meanwhile, north of us in Canada, they were subsidizing their timber industry. But I wonder, is that starting to change now after these radical leftists like Trudeau and the next Trudeau? Because we're starting to see a lot more smoke from Canada earlier in the season here.
Yeah, there's some pushback when the smoke from Canada starts to show up in New York City, right? Or I think there's a passage in my book about one of the loggers saying, you know, in Seattle, they're complaining about the smoke. If that doesn't take the heart out of a guy, I don't know what does, you know? While, you know, you're watching all around you burn and worried about getting your kids out alive, they're complaining, oh, it's a little smoky today, you know, this is horrible. Meanwhile, they've put in regulations to stop the guys from putting in fire breaks and from harvesting timber and dealing with bark beetle. But, you know, now it's inconveniencing them, so they're a little bit upset. It looks like COVID brought everybody into the fray. People got to see how these regulations were made. They got to see how they would damage, you know, businesses. At one point, 50% of Los Angeles was unemployed due to COVID regs that were unnecessary. And, you know, you've watched Pacific Palisades burn to the ground. So it's hitting the cities pretty hard now. That means we might have enough political clout to make some changes in life. And if people don't embrace the farmers, the fishermen, those loggers among them, they're doomed. They're just simply doomed. So I'm hoping that we can get a shift going on here. One of the loggers who read my book said, you know, this is the first piece of fiction I think I've ever read where a logger is perceived as a good guy.
Huh. Interesting.
That's a problem in our culture, isn't it?
Well, that's what our culture has become. You know, a man is a woman is a man, right is wrong, wrong is right. The good guys who help to build the homes, they turn into the bad guys. The Dark Side of Hunger Mountain is the name of the book. Teresa Platt, T.H. Platt, such an honor to have you on the show this morning. Anything else you want to tell our listeners all across Montana?
No, I really, really enjoyed it, Aaron. And if there's a patron of the arts out there who can help me with audiobooks in multiple languages, I need your number. You got to find me. So Teresa Platt, T.H. Platt on Substack, Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and I look forward to hearing people's comments.
Well, you're probably going to have to do a book tour across Montana now. Hey, random question for you, too, before I go to our next break. So have you ever been to Glacier National Park before?
I've been close, but not in it. But I have been in Montana, and, of course, I know Libby actually features in the book.
Libby's an isn't that an incredible town?
Oh, Libby's in the book, and there's all kinds of little pieces of Montana in that book, and including snippets of, you know, the wonderful Bruce Vincent, who speaks so well on timber.
That's right.
And a shout out to Jim Peterson at Evergreen Magazine, who was so patient with my questions over many, many, many years.
The reason why I ask about Glacier in particular, if you've been to Libby, you've seen the beauty of Northwest Montana for sure, and the tragedy of Northwest Montana, the fact that why are people hungry? Why do people need grocery store gift cards on a Saturday morning when they are surrounded by wealth in timber and in mining and minerals and everything? It's because our government has locked them out. But the reason why I ask about Glacier is because one of our longtime radio guys just went to Glacier last week, and he said the tourists are killing Glacier. They have no concept of staying on the trail, so they're just trampling everywhere. They're pulled over in places where you shouldn't pull over. And to me, it's kind of just a symbol of the lawlessness. The people who are disconnected from the land have no real understanding of how to protect the land.
It's a really good point. Really good point. You know, live lightly on the land, and we'll be okay. But if you throw a couple of million people into a park a year, there's an impact.
And meanwhile, the rest of us from Montana can't go into the park like we used to because, you know, the Democrats started forcing you to have a reservation to go into the park. So now the place is filled with a bunch of people who don't know the land, don't care as much for the land as those who are actually near the park, been through the park and know what it means, and would probably police those people up if they saw them doing the wrong thing. Teresa Platt, great to have you on the show. Thanks again for your time this morning. Tell our friend William Perry Penley we said hello.
I will. Thank you so much, Aaron, and goodbye to everybody, and I hope you enjoy the book.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. Okay, we've got phone lines open for a quick few minutes if you want to jump in right now, 406-294-0970.
Turn up your radio. Here's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
We have new declassified emails showing key spies were shocked to learn that the Steele dossier was used in the Russian meddling. In other words, I'll give you a quick summary of it. So you have rank and file people that are in the intelligence community. In other words, career people that are dedicated to their craft, good at their jobs, loyal, that are straight arrows. And then all of a sudden, that information that they determine there is nothing nefarious in terms of any collusion. They write about it repeatedly and extensively, and then it ends up in the hands of the big people, and they start polluting it and destroying it and contaminating it and using it to harm Donald Trump.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
Hey, Sean Hannity here, and these are certainly uncertain times with everything happening overseas. We've got to be on high alert here at home. Everyone needs to go to BYRNA.com. Why? I want you to see this non-lethal technology that can save lives, and you will see their compact launcher, the world's smallest, less lethal pistol launcher. And you can incapacitate any perpetrator, regardless of size, 30 to 40 minutes. The great thing about Byrna is it has kinetic rounds designed to incapacitate these people. The compact launcher is perfect for women if you want protection and you don't want to carry a firearm, and you can put it in your purse and nobody will know you have it. Byrna, no background check, can be shipped directly to your door. BYRNA is trusted by all of the professionals because the technology is so superior and a great alternative to lethal force. Visit Byrna, BYRNA.com today and find the right launcher for you and your family. That's BYRNA.com.
The week ahead.
Monday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has called for a special legislative session that mainly addresses issues that arose from the deadly flooding earlier this month in the Hill Country, including improving flood early warning systems and providing more relief funding for victims. Wednesday, Brian Koberger is back in court, where he will be formally sentenced for the murder of four University of Idaho students in 2022. Koberger agreed to plead guilty to avoid a potential death sentence. Thursday, San Diego Comic-Con kicks off. And while fans will look to the panels, booths, and more for sneak peeks and spoilers, this year's edition marks the first time Star Wars director George Lucas takes part. Friday, President Trump heads across the pond, visiting Scotland, where a meeting with the British Prime Minister is on the books. Also, former New York Congressman George Santos is expected to report to prison, where he will serve 87 months for wire fraud and aggravated identity theft. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Anna Eliopoulos, Fox News.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got a lot of ground that we're covering here on Monday's Montana Talks. Yeah, that's the big picture. If there's, you know, one big thing to take away from that conversation with Teresa Platt here is this is what the deep state does. This is what the deep state has been doing. Phony science, phony intelligence assessments to target you, to target their political opponents, to target the industries that they don't like. I mean, this ties. So for those of you, if you want, later this morning, if you missed it, Sunday morning, on Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo, Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was on there. I would encourage you, go watch, go listen to the entire 16-minute interview with Maria Bartiromo and Tulsi Gabbard. And wow, I mean, Tulsi Gabbard lays it out. Let me give you, well, let me see here. How much time we got? Okay, not too much time. All right, before I give the little scene setter, the little rundown, let's just jump right into it. Tulsi Gabbard, again, they fake the science so they can target the timber industry. They fake the science so they can target the energy industry on sage grouse. They fake the intelligence assessments so they can justify a coup taking place against the President of the United States. Here is Tulsi Gabbard. She released like over 100 documents on Friday solidifying what we already knew happened. They lied about the intelligence to justify the Russia hoax and the coup against Donald Trump.
There's no question in my mind that this intelligence community assessment that President Obama ordered be published, which contained a manufactured intelligence document. It's worse than even politicization of intelligence. It was manufactured intelligence that sought to achieve President Obama and his team's objective, which was undermining President Trump's presidency and subverting the will of the American people. So yes, next week we will be releasing more detailed information about how exactly this took place and the extent to which this information was sought to be hidden from the American people, hidden from officials who would be in a position to do something about it. And that's really the point here that I think is most important, Maria, and you said it in your opening. Accountability is essential for the future of our country, for the American people to have any sense of trust in the integrity of our democratic republic. Accountability, action, prosecution, indictments for those who are responsible for trying to steal our democracy is essential for us to make sure that this never happens to our country again.
Yeah, this makes Watergate look like absolutely nothing. Watergate is a complete freaking joke. It is not even a footnote in American political history compared to what Obama, Comey, Clapper, Brennan, and the rest of these crooks did to this country. Here's the summary provided by Fox News Radio earlier this morning. Several of our stations are Fox News Radio affiliates, so I get to kind of their news rundown each morning. DNI, Tulsi Gabbard on Friday releasing over 100 pages of documents she says expose a treasonous conspiracy led by former President Obama to frame Donald Trump as a Russian asset and sabotage his 2016 win. Gabbard claims intel agencies initially agreed Russia lacked the intent or capability to sway the election, but that changed after Trump's victory. She pointed to a December 9th, 2016 meeting of top Obama officials as the turning point. Afterward, an email from then DNI James Clapperzade allegedly ordered a revised assessment at Obama's request. The intelligence agencies said one thing in their intelligence assessment. Obama, Clapper, and those crooks ordered them to revise their assessment so they could push this phony hoax against President Trump and launch a years-long coup attempt against the President of the United States of America. That's what has, we already knew, that's what has now been further confirmed and exposed in these newly unclassified documents.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Any life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.